everyone. Welcome to Garden Fork Radio, the podcast about what I call DIY living. It's an eclectic mix of how-to maker stuff, basically. Cool stuff that I do like to talk about, I share with my friends. Today, Rick joins me to talk about some gardening, the controversy about splitting wood, the mouse trap controversy, and then some viewer mail. So, here we go. Hey, welcome, Rick.
Good morning, Eric. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. I'm walking and talking. That's always in the plus column.
Yeah, how's your back?
It's much better, thank you.
Good,
thank
you. Excellent. Yeah, we kind of have been missing each other the last week or so, but I'm glad you found some folks to help fill.
Well, you're always out in the garden, so...
Well, you know, this is the perfect time of year. I love this. You know, you mentioned it on one of your other shows, you know, the long sloping shoulders of summer, you know, that I just love these months. And it's just so much fun to be out. You know, you can get a lot of work done and you don't overheat and melt into the ground like I normally do.
Yeah, we had freezing temperatures this week, and then Thursday it's going to be 70 degrees.
Really? Have you had snow? I saw something about snow in the Northeast.
But that's a little bit of flurries up in Connecticut, but not, I'm down in Brooklyn here, so no flurries yet, thankfully.
Yeah, it's a little early for me yet. So, but I've got lots of gardening projects going on, lots of looking forward to next year's gardening, which, you know, you lay your groundwork for gardening the season before the big, that. I'm babbling now, aren't I?
Here, I'll do a segue.
So, yeah, do a segue.
You talked to me this week about your upgraded grow lights, and I was very curious. You were nice enough to send me a video that I could not download, but that's my fault, not yours.
Well, I will make it a little smaller, and I'll send it to you again. I bought, last year, I tried to grow, do some seed starting and whatnot in the house. And I used regular fluorescent grow lights in a two-tube work light arrangement. You know, just standard.
Like a four-foot light. Yeah,
48-inch shop light. And it didn't do very well. And even when the bulb was sitting right down on the leaves of the plant. And I began to read that they actually fade after a while. And I'd had this because I'm cheap. I'd had this for maybe four or five years.
The fluorescent tubes start to fade.
Yeah, the fluorescent tubes start to fade. And I'm kind of cheap, and I've had it 4 or 5 years, and I thought, well, maybe that's the problem. But I've also been fascinated by the new technology of LEDs, and particularly the ones that have red and blue, which are the light frequencies that your plants really absorb. The green that you see is what's reflected. The plants don't need that. And so I went online, found some well-reviewed lights from Galaxy Hydro. And I got them at Amazon. And I use the Garden Fork Link. So you get a few cents off of that. And they are an amazing outfit. It's about a foot long and 8 inches wide, has a whole bunch of LEDs. They're 9 bands of color. And, you know, it's mostly red and blue, but it has a couple of UV lights in there, UV LEDs. And plants need a little bit of UV, but it also helps to sanitize your plant surfaces. And so if you're having virus problems and fungus and that kind of thing, it really helps with that. There are also a couple of infrared LEDs in there, so you know, because plants need some light in that frequency. And then the rest of those bands are mostly in the red and blue, just different frequencies of red and blue light. And so I sit here bathed when it's on in this kind of magenta aura, and it's interesting. It's really fun. And the plants I'm using, I have some basil that I had rescued out of the dumpster down at the big box store. They had thrown them away because they couldn't keep them going in their greenhouse anymore. And they were wilted and just almost dead. I pulled them out of the dumpster, put them on a grow pad, a warmer, and watered them up, put them under this light. And I'm going to have basil all winter long now.
That's also that light therapy, you know, for people that live in areas with very short daylight in the winter, you could get that daylight light therapy.
Oh, yeah. You know, I've got a couple of those bulbs, too.
So can I ask how much the light cost?
It was $115.
All right. I've actually seen grow light rigs are quite a bit more than that. So I think, and plus the fact that you don't have to go buy bulbs every year for that. I think that'd be really nice.
Right. And this one was really highly rated, and it has a lot of, you know, it has two fans to kind of keep it cool, and it's guaranteed for 10,000 hours.
There you go.
So I thought, well, that's, you know, that's a pretty good deal. So I'm very happy with it so far, Galaxy Hydro. The only thing is it's with these two, has two computer fans on it. And it went, and I bought two of the units, and so I have four fans running. And it's kind of like sitting in a server farm right now. You know, it's kind of loud. I had to turn it off so we could do the podcast.
All right, cool. So also, you are working on a version of the Garden Fork Hoop House, the southern version.
The southern version, yeah. I am working on it to make it a little more modular so that I can save it from year to year. And I used, was it CDX plywood, the outdoor plywood?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to sheathe it along the bottom so where it contacts the earth so it doesn't rot there. And I'm using two of those vents.
The thermatic vent that we have on the end of the hoop house.
They open at 70 degrees, they close at 40. And I'm using two because I'm so much farther south than you are that I think I'll need the extra ventilation and cross ventilation for it. And I'm building it so I can take it apart and stand it up against the fence and save it and then reuse it next year and see if I can't get 4 or 5 years out of this.
Yeah, my issue with the hoop house is it's kind of big and clunky. So I hide it behind my woodshed. But if you don't have an area to kind of hide it, it might help if you can. The PVC hoops you can take and remove and you can break it down, but it's still kind of a bulky big thing. And I found that the plastic I use, which is just plastic from your home supply store, lasts 2 years.
Right.
Unless you get a really heavy snow and it might pierce it. Or like a tree limb, like I've had tree limbs come flying into the yard and they missile right through the plastic.
I'm using the concrete wire, the reinforcement wire that you had shown in your improved version.
Yep.
And what I'm doing is the bottom stringer across the sides, I'm setting that up so I can take it apart. And so I have the 2x6s and the wire, and I can just straighten those out and stand them against the fence.
And then, there you go.
You know, so, and then I'll have the end pieces, the plywood, that I can take the vents out of, store the vents, and then store that plywood. Trying to make it a little modular so it'll you know, keep a little better and doesn't get in the way, because I don't have nearly as much room as you do.
Yeah. And you got neighbors.
I got neighbors. Yeah, they complain a little bit. But I've been doing my usual demonstration project, you know, Rick's lazy gardener business. I love this time of year. I have completely mulched my entire, all the beds at our house with pine needles that have been gathered up by my industrious, anal retentive neighbors who bag them and set them out on the curb for Tuesday pickup. Monday, I drive around with the car, grab all the bags of pine needles, and I mulched all of my beds now with pine needles. And it's all free, and they've done all the work, and I've done the lazy gardener part. Plus, I now have, I think I've collected close to 80 bags of dried leaves that I have a big mulch bin. And my neighbors, my good neighbors, have gathered all those together, put them in bags, and set them on the curb. I picked them up, and I'll have a leaf mulch for next spring. And I'll be using that in all my garden beds.
Leaf mulch is really great, I found, on vegetable beds when I have the soaker hoses.
Mm-hmm.
That are, you know, sometimes I bury them in the ground. Sometimes I just leave them on the soil itself. And I don't use a leaf mulch when I've done direct seeding. But if I've done starter plants and I transplant them, the leaf mulch is great. I'll put like 2 inches of leaf mulch there. It holds in the moisture. The worms love it. And stuff that I've started from seed, after they come up about 2 or 3 inches, then I lay in a leaf mulch. Right. It's great stuff.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And, you know, it's light. It's easy to use. And you just do it like any other mulch. I will slide sticks through the wire fencing that I'm using to hold it all together so that it will aerate a little bit during the winter. And I'll throw in a handful of soil, and also a couple of handfuls of fertilizer, just to kind of get it going so it turns it into a real composty, rich humus at the end of the winter.
If you have neighbors that have cows or horses, if you throw a couple shovelfuls of manure in there, it's like a yeast starter, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You also have a video on cold frames.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go up to Williamsburg, and they have the recreated colonial Williamsburg up there, and you go to the garden section, they have these cold frames that are dug down maybe about 4 or 5 feet, and they fill the bottom of the that trench with horse manure, put the soil on top of it, and then close the cold frame. Yep. And they seed in it, and that horse manure will keep the cold frames hot all winter long. And their big problem is propping them open every morning so that they can air out, because they do get a little overheated. But you can, that's wonderful stuff, horse manure.
I think it's called a hotbed. I think that's what they call it.
A hotbed? It's a hotbed of political activity.
Well, speaking of hot topics, I posted a video last week about splitting wood with your axe, and I did not realize people's strong opinions about this. So,
is this worse than the chainsaw massacre that you had?
You know, I just wanted to make a video to show people, go outside. Almost everyone has an axe in their tool shed, you know. It's probably been there for 20 years, but sharpen your axe. I had some birch, so it's a light wood rather than like a hardwood like oak. And you can spend a half hour splitting wood, and you're outside, you're exercising, and get some work done. So I made a video about that, and just showing the basics of throwing an axe, that kind of thing.
And you know, it helps people like me, because I never grew up around that kind of thing. So I don't have any background, any knowledge in it, and I appreciate you doing it.
I think it's obvious how to split wood.
Yeah. What did you do wrong? Apparently something.
I used an axe instead of a maul.
What's the difference?
Well, an axe, according to some people, is used for basically chopping down trees, mm-hmm. or chopping limbs off of fallen trees. If you want to split wood, you should use a maul. And a maul is like a sledgehammer with an axe front. It has a much thicker body to it. And my biggest sin was on some of the birch, the axe didn't split through, so I used a sledge to tap the axe head through the wood. And over time, and I agree with this, you can mushroom the back of the axe and ruin it by hitting it with a sledgehammer.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't slamming it, and I was basically just tapping it through. And not every time, but there were quite a few people that were like, you should never do that. And I'm like, you know, it's birch, it's a light wood, and it's an axe, and I'm in my backyard. So
it's mine. Yeah. Well, that makes sense to me. It was a single-edged axe. You weren't hitting on a double-edged axe, were you?
Right.
So I don't... Is a maul just bigger and heavier?
It is, and you can also throw your back out easier with a maul. And not everyone can throw a maul. They make lighter ones, they make heavier ones. So my point was just to go split some wood, you know?
Well, you know, I like the second video better, where you you borrowed your neighbor's hydraulic wood splitter.
Yeah.
I think that works a lot better. That's the lazy man's way, and that's my way.
You know, the key to that is maintaining good relations with my neighbor, is that I returned that splitter cleaner than when I got it.
Oh, yeah.
And I put fresh gas in it with gas stabilizer, and I filled up the tank. It's not a very big tank, but still, I made sure he saw that the thing was much cleaner when he got it back, and so he'll let me borrow it again.
Oh, that's great.
just bring back the tools cleaner than you got them and bring them back promptly. I have a neighbor who borrowed my hand truck last week. I don't have it back yet. And I'm like,
Yeah, that's always annoying. You know, I borrowed neighbor's rototiller to turn up a new bed out of grass. And I had it back that same day. You know, you got to give it back. You know, and I tried. I'm not sure I was as thorough as you were, but I cleaned it up and hosed it off and got all the grass that was kind of wrapped around the tines and whatnot. And got all that off before I took
That's
it back
perfect.
To him.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm wondering if you would consider becoming a monthly supporter of Garden Fork Radio and GardenFork.tv. We've made it really easy to do so. We've started a Patreon campaign, and you choose a dollar amount every month that you would like to contribute to Garden Fork. The suggested dollar amount is $3 a month. That's less than a dollar a show, a buck a show, as Rick calls it. It's about $36 a year, so that's like a magazine subscription, basically, is how I think about it. If you're interested, there's a link in the show notes here. If you're listening on an iPhone in the podcast app, just tap on the Garden Fork Radio logo of this episode, and it will show the show notes, and there's a link in there. Or go to patreon.com/gardenfork. That's patreon.com/gardenfork. There's also a link on every page of our website. If you consider that, that would be really cool. Appreciate that. You can also support Garden Fork by using our Amazon shopping link, which is on our website. You can also go to gardenfork.tv/Amazon, and that, if the technology is working, should take you to Amazon as well. All right? Thank you. There was another controversy last week.
The Garden Fork controversy line. What else has happened?
I made two videos about how to get rid of mice.
Mm-hmm.
And I am of the camp of if you just catch the mice and release them, they're going to come back into your house.
Yes.
So, and I think there's a huge, vibrant population of mice in my yard. So the ones that come into my house, I think I'm going to terminate their life very quickly. So I made one video about what I call mouse trap hacks, about using the snap traps.
I saw that. You didn't even give them a fighting chance.
No. And then I made a video about my favorite mouse trap, which is an electronic mouse trap that basically electrocutes the mice.
Right.
And it works really well. But there is a contingent of Garden Fork viewers that want to do the catch and release thing. And I'm fine with that if that's what you want to do. But I think if they're in my house, I think they're just going to want to come back in again because they know the scent trail to come back in.
Right. Yeah. They're laying down a little urine scent and
yep.
just as they run. And so even when if you get that one mouse, the rest are going to follow. So you kind of, you know, if you get one, you get a lot is what happens.
And I found one of their holes where they come in. So I stuffed steel wool in there
mm-hmm.
and they push the steel wool back out again.
We have a huge, of course, you know, we live in what Jefferson called a malarial swamp. And we have a huge Norwegian rat problem, roof rat. I think it's called a Norwegian roof rat
yep.
problem. And
a non-native species.
A non-native species. And for some reason, they decided that under my house was the ideal place to winter a couple of years ago. And they caused so much damage under the house. And silly me, I didn't realize that all I really had to do is just open the access and throw the two Karen Terriers under there
yeah.
and let them have a blast chasing rats. But it took me a while to get rid of them. And they gnawed on a lot of, pulled down a lot of insulation, you know, for bedding and whatnot mm-hmm. that I had spent a lot of money putting up there. Trying to secure the envelope of my house, the environmental envelope, to keep it cool and warm, control the humidity. And they also damaged some wiring. In fact, we had one rat that managed to electrocute himself the hard way.
Yeah. I'll link to the trap in the show notes here, but it's an electronic trap. It's about $20, but it works flawlessly. And the same company makes a larger version for rats. And my buddy in New York here is a building super, and he swears by this thing.
Oh, really?
I've never had rats in my house because I got the place pretty much buttoned up. But in a lot of rental buildings, they have problems, and this thing zaps them.
I have seen like YouTube videos of the Rat Patrol in New York City where they go into the abandoned buildings and whatnot, and that is frightening work. Some of those rats are really aggressive.
You know, the weird thing is my neighbors upstate are like, Eric, you know, what neighborhood do you live in? Do you have drug addicts in the corner like we see on TV? And 99% of New York is not that, you know? There's a couple pockets of New York that have some problems, but New York City is one of the safest places in the world to live. We have rats here because not everyone takes care of their garbage really well, and they just set it out in plastic bags, and it's just like, whoa, let's open that plastic bag and have some chicken, you know?
Yeah.
So there is that issue. But anyway, so we don't have that many abandoned buildings. It's just I think the news kind of likes to show controversy.
Well, that's, you know, makes me horrified going to New York. And of course, you know, is there people there, so I don't want to go.
My biggest hint for people that if you have a mouse problem, I've run into this several times with friends, is that they leave the dog food out or the cat food out 24/7,
right,
on the floor, and I'm like, well, you're feeding the mice, you know.
You bet. You know, one of the best things is you can go down to it's the Orange or the Blue store and get one of their 5-gallon buckets, and there is a an auxiliary lid, and it's not the snap-on lids that come with it. These are called a gamma lid, and it's a black lid that you have to pound on with a hammer, and then the center of the lid is segmented, and you can screw it off, and so you're actually adding a screw top to that lid.
Yeah.
And those things are pretty much rat-proof if you need to preserve a large amount of dog food or cat food. Or any kind of feed out in the open, so that the rats stay away from it. But if you don't feed the rats, they won't come back.
Or mice. Yeah.
Or mice.
Hey, would you like to hear some viewer mail? A while ago, with the Garden Fork email list, I had a giveaway for some Troy Bilt hand tools, and Troy Bilt is a sponsor of Garden Fork.
Thank you, Troy Bilt.
You can sign up for our email list. There's a link in the show notes here of this podcast, or just go to gardenfork.tv, and there's a sign up on every page of the site, usually at the top and on the right-hand side.
You know, I am eyeballing, by the way, a Troy Bilt wood chipper and leaf mulcher to add to my leaf collection. I think I've got one cornered here locally that I found on Craigslist. It's used, but boy, those things are built tough, and they'll last forever.
And, an unsolicited endorsement from Rick.
And I'm also interested in that. What do they call the new multi-part system that they?
The Flex.
If they would get the right combination of pieces, I'm actually kind of sold on that, because if you can have one motor unit that you actually maintain really well, and then have different pieces you can put on it. I really want a generator, and I want I wouldn't mind a wood chipper, just a kind of a lightweight one even.
They're working on it. They're rolling out some new tools next spring. They're going to tell me about them. I'm also doing a video. Troy Bilt sent me a 4-cycle string trimmer unit, and it's very much like the Flex system, where the motor, the shaft disconnects, and you take the string trimmer part off. And I have a brush trimmer for it, and I have a chainsaw pole saw that's 11 feet long for it. And I made a video this week, and I'll be posting that soon. But that was pretty cool as well. So, and again, they're compensating me for my time here, so that is a sponsored video. So Susan won our hand tool giveaway, and she wrote me a note and said, I've been meaning to drop you a line to tell you how much I enjoy your podcast, videos, and emails. I feel like you and Rick are old friends who keep me company out in the garden and when I'm doing chores around the house.
Wasn't that nice?
And please stop apologizing for geeking out. I found your podcast while searching for Evernote podcast years ago. I'm an avid gardener and dog person with a golden retriever. My husband loves to cook and do DIY projects. Our house was built in 1919. We put an addition on in 2001. We've taken on a lot of projects. I get so much more from your podcast than what I was searching for originally. Keep up the great work. And that was from Susan.
Well, thank you, Susan, and congratulations. Enjoy the tools.
Yeah. Our next one is from Andrea. Hi, guys. Stupid question here. There's no such thing as a stupid question, I think. But I don't have a food processor because after 12 years, my Hamilton Beach finally went on me. I want to make the kale pesto, which is a video we did recently. But how could I get the same consistency for pesto? I've never made pesto before, but we would sure like to try it. Keep up the great videos. We love the show. That's from Andrea in Oregon.
You know, my favorite kitchen tool has turned out to be a stick blender that came with a small food processor attachment.
Yes, I have one of those, yeah.
And, you know, it's just the two of us, she who must be obeyed and I. And I do so much work with that stick blender and that small add-on, food processor. Maybe that would be an ideal thing. I think it's wonderful. I have gotten rid of our big blender, the one we used to make margaritas in, because we don't need to be drinking any more margaritas around here. Yeah. And I use the stick blender almost exclusively. And, you know, you can even stick it down your stews and your soups and stuff in the pot, you know, to kind of get the right consistency and everything. I just love it.
You might also be able to find one at a tag sale.
You never know. Sure. Yeah.
I use a food processor because I, you know, for making pizza crust dough, stuff like that, pie crust.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Rick really appreciates that you do all those things. And I tried to mimic you and follow along every time you made something like that. We cannot eat that much bread around here anymore.
Yeah. All right. Our next one is from Peg. Hey, Eric, I stumbled on your site a couple years ago while recuperating from blowing out my Achilles tendon, and watching your videos was and is better than anything on TV. That's how you get your email read, right?
That's
there.
Right, you bet.
I simply cannot wait for each and every video. I purchased the Artisan Bread book, and I make bread often. I'm on the hunt for old bricks because hello brick pizza oven. Oh, and I think you should make soap. I've been making several batches lately, but I think your videos would like that. And that's from Peg. I've been thinking about soap because actually I have a lot of ash from our fireplace. And
that'd be ideal.
Back in the day, that's how you made soap, was with animal fats and wood ash.
You know, animal fats like beeswax?
No, more like rendered fats from cattle or pigs.
Well, and you like oatmeal, and you know, we've been trying to, you know, Mike and I have been telling you, you've been eating too much oatmeal. You can make three-year oatmeal in the soap.
Yeah. So, very interesting. That is definitely on the to-do list here. So, thank you, Peg.
Okay.
Go ahead.
You know, there are kits, too. You can kind of buy, you know, from the bee supply houses have a lot of, where you can kind of get a starter kit to, you know, see how you like doing it, just to try your hand at it first time. And it's always nice to get everything together at one time and just see if you like to do it without having to go out and pick all the different pieces and get too much, a gallon of this and a gallon of that, that type of thing.
Cool.
Yeah.
Our last one is a gardening question from Francois. Hey, Eric, apparently seeds will germinate faster after the husk has been scarred.
That's
in
true.
Some way.
Mm-hmm.
Could you do a video with some experiments regarding this? Yeah, some seeds actually need what's called, I think it's called scarification.
Right.
Which is to split the tough hull or the seed coat on the seed before it will germinate.
Right.
I don't know if all seeds need to do that.
Well, some are too sensitive. I mean, like you wouldn't do it with tomato seeds.
Or like lettuce seeds.
Yeah, lettuce seeds, that type of thing. But some of the larger seeds, particularly like squash seeds, pumpkin seeds, they have a tough outer hull. Nut seeds, particularly, they're made to pass through the digestive tract of animals and survive, and then land with the manure, some ready-grown fertilizer right there, on a spot to begin a new plant, and so they're made to last a long time that way, so it helps to break them open a little bit.
There are also there's some pine trees that the seeds of those pines will not grow until after a forest fire.
I've heard that. Yeah, you know, the ponderosa pines.
In the east, we have I think it's called a jack pine. There was a couple of years ago, there was a large forest, believe it or not, a forest fire in Long Island. in a park area, and it was all scarred. And then, like 6 months later, all these little pine trees are popping up, and they're the jack pines.
Wow.
Also, coneflowers, because I've grown coneflowers from seed. You take the coneflower seed, mix it with some peat moss or coconut fiber, something like that,
mm-hmm.
fairly kind of moist, in a zipper bag, and put it in the fridge all winter. And that it needs that cold, wet season before they will germinate. So I'm sure that it's basically also loosening the seed coat.
Yeah. Wow. Interesting. I didn't know that.
So you learned something today, Rick.
I did. I learned something from you all the time, Eric.
How to use an axe.
Well,
and not use an axe.
You know, you use what you got. And sometimes, you know, I would not hesitate if I didn't have tons of firewood to cut to use an axe the way you did, instead of running out and buying a maul, if that's what I had.
Yeah. Well, what do you all think? It'd be good to hear from you guys. Radio@gardenfork.tv. And if you express your undying love for the show, then we will read your email. All right. Well, thank you, Rick. Thanks for taking the time. Everyone here, thanks for listening.
Well, I'm glad we finally connected. Boy, we had a couple of weeks where we just missed each other completely.
That's okay, Rick. We will always connect.
We will always connect. It's so good to hear your voice, my friend.
All right, good to hear you, and thanks everyone, and we'll see you next time.
Okay, bye. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Garden Fork's theme music is used under license from UniqueTracks.com.